Hello, hello, hello.
We are back for another Trailblazer Chat at the Procurement Games Podcast and Open Conversation. My name is Arlen Pingle, CEO of Mackey Company and your host for this podcast. Mackey Company is a strategic consulting company focused on procurement policy development involving entrepreneurs and workforce in the realm of government and private sectors. Our focus is on communities of color, women, and veterans, and how we can strategically assist this historically marginalized group and position them for the win. Every week, we feature an entrepreneur's journey of success and failures in getting contracts with federal, state, and local agencies, along with the private slash major corporations, often referred to as primes. When the last Thursday of the month hits, we feature an industry or government agency expert, one who is paving the way to truly, quote, level the playing field and position us for success in this ever-changing world of procurement, policy, entrepreneurship, and workforce. In our studios today is the most dynamic person I know in the Twin Cities that has been championing minorities, women, veterans, and small businesses in the construction realm. So I want to welcome the outreach director for McGough Construction, Karen McCabe. Karen, how are you?
Good.
This is exciting.
It is exciting. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right. I'm going to let my audience know you're a little bit on the nervous side, but you'll be fine.
Yes, I am. You're a good leader, and I'll just follow. So you lead the dance, and I'll not try to step on your toes too often.
That sounds good. So tell me a little bit about you, how you came to be Karen. How did you end up in DEI, right? What I call the origin story. Tell me about that.
Sure. I am the oldest of seven kids. We were a good Irish Catholic family. Dad was a St. Paul police officer and my mom was a nurse. Keep in mind, I'm older than probably a lot of folks that are listening to your podcast here. And that was a time where women didn't go to work. They stayed at home and had families. So my mom was kind of a trailblazer in that. But remember, we did have seven children. So there was basically a time where I was very responsible on a regular basis for keeping an eye on the other six, which I think in one way shaped me quite a bit. I became rather bossy, but also rather detailed and rather organized, right? Because
sure,
in order to keep that many kids safe and fed and all that other kind of stuff, that I kind of had to develop that. So that's partly who I am. I started out in the field with McGough Construction in 1999.
You're an institution.
Been around for a while. One of the first project that I worked on was the Tronic World headquarters off of 694, which was one of the largest projects that McGough had ever done in their portfolio. And it was a really, really fun project. We had like seven different buildings on the campus. Went through a program called Women Venture. And at the time, Women Venture did two programs. They did women business entrepreneurship and women in the workforce. And so they had a program in carpentry, did some work on the Penumbra Theater in their set building. Oh. And that was really fascinating. I loved it. And I also...
Was that your inauguration into the construction
that
realm?
That was my inauguration into the construction realm. And I was hired by McGough Construction, not necessarily sight unseen, but I had zero experience in that industry, but just a willingness to learn and hard worker too, right?
Right.
And I think I started working when I was 12. So I have a fairly strong work ethic.
And earlier than that with the six siblings, right?
Right, yes.
Unpaid labor.
Right.
I'm sorry, labor of love.
Absolutely.
I apologize.
So I started out in the field. I didn't feel like I was being fully utilized to my fullest extent. So I reached out to our superintendent on that project and said, you know, I think I'd like a little bit more, right?
Yeah.
I think I'd like a little bit more responsibility. I'd like to learn a little bit more. So he was really open to that, brought me into the trailer and allowed me to start learning plans, updating those, doing RFIs, kind of getting a little bit more actively involved in understanding the entire process. With that, went through Medtronic World Headquarters, General Mills World Headquarters.
Wow.
The Ordway, the Guthrie, and then I had the opportunity, our leadership team came to me and said, would you be interested in this diversity stuff? Mm-hmm. And literally, we had no type of structure or job description or anything along those lines that kind of fit that. But it was certainly something that the company felt that was important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm all in for learning something new. So I really, really enjoy that. I really enjoy a new challenge. I enjoy getting to a point where I feel like I'm developed kind of an expertise almost.
Sure.
Then I start, much probably like you, then I start getting bored. I'm just like, okay, done with that. What's next, right?
Sure.
So when they came to me and offered me that, I said, gosh, I know literally nothing about that. And we at the time had been working really closely with a wonderful woman by the name of Claudia Osterman. Mm-hmm. She was a founding member of the Association of Women Contractors and worked also with MnDOT, if I'm not mistaken, a long time ago, and really kind of set the bar for putting goals on projects and stuff. She agreed to be my mentor for a while. Awesome. And I learned quite a lot from her, and also learned a lot from that whole spaghetti method, right? You take that handful of spaghetti, you throw it against the wall, and you see what sticks.
Sure.
So that brings me to where I am today. I'm constantly learning. I get an opportunity to meet vibrant business people like yourself and work towards a more diverse workforce and vendor base at McGough.
So I've got to go back to the childhood with the six kids. And, you know, knowing that story now, it kind of makes sense about how you are about nurturing businesses. Gosh, Karen, you know, I always said that you were a connector, but that mother hen image, now it makes sense. You know,
wait a second. I really like the connector over the mother hen thing. So here's, I got to share this with you. So it's kind of funny how we think of terms like that, but you say mother hen, one of our COO calls me a bulldog. Karen, you get your teeth into something and you don't let go until it's done. And I'm like, well, yeah.
You're right. Mother henning probably isn't the right word.
I don't know. Bulldogging probably isn't either.
Probably not. But let's talk about being the connector that you are. How about that? Tell me a little bit about McGough.
So I've been with the company for 22 years. Came on. It was a fairly small organization, family run, six generations. Started out with craftspeople, right? Their specialty was masonry and bricklaying. And to this day, that's what their specialty is in concrete, some of the areas in which they self-perform. Really, what to me is what's key about McGough is they have a very respectful environment. Everybody brings something of value to the table. They're about collaboration. They put a lot of weight into how their people and their staff interact with owners, but not only owners, but subcontracting partners, vendors, their own people, and their communities.
That's
and
awesome.
I think that's really who they are. They understand that importance of developing, building, and maintaining relationships.
Where is McGough?
McGough's headquarters is located in Roseville, and we have several other regional offices throughout Minnesota, but we also have offices in North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Texas.
In the cities and states that you are located in, is the premise kind of the same, the work from the community and generate from that epicenter?
Absolutely. I think because it's that collaborative, transparent, and building trust, an interaction at a time, and trust can be lost just at a snap of a finger, right? They really drive is the idea as we're partnering with whomever we're working with, and we really want to bring value to that particular project and to the group. And we know that we're in a really competitive area in the construction industry. So we have to differentiate ourselves. And I think the way we do that is our collaborative and transparent measure.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That's how we do things.
Well, and that approach is almost always effective. Working with community, when you're working with, you know, trades, when you're working with the subcontractors there, that makes a lot of sense. So I want to spin off a little bit on that conversation with working with subcontractors. How does McGough engage the community of subcontractors, particularly for BIPOC women and veteran-owned small businesses, right? And that's kind of what the platform of this podcast is about, is to talk about, you know, how do we get into McGough? Mm-hmm. How do we engage with them so that they know that I exist?
Right. That's a great question. I think one of the things is that part and parcel of what my role is at McGough is kind of being that single point of contact. What we've heard in the past often is, you know, yeah, I put a bid in and I never heard back, or I reached out to that project manager to find out, like, where was I, or how come I didn't, or, you know, where did my bid fall? And I never got an answer back. And I don't think it's because they didn't want to answer you back, that they just have so many other priorities keeping that project running. And that's where I could come in. And that's where I can reach out to that project manager, that project coordinator. I have access that I can find out that information and get back to you on that. So as far as reaching out to the BIPOC community, I spent the first probably 5 years of this particular role trying to understand what the environment looked like and getting involved in organizations that support BIPOC subcontracting partners, veteran contracting partners. And so we became active in that. And that's my role, to act as McGough's representative in those organizations as much as possible. Where I'd like to kind of come back, though, we have a process for all of the contractors that need to get into our database. It's really driven by our risk management side of things. There's a pre-qualification process that has to go through. It's that personal interaction between me and that subcontracting partner that can help get into that process and help guide along that process, right?
You have a network of programs and programmatic providers and such. Is that the uniqueness of McGough, to utilize, again, community resources for a program?
I don't know if it's necessarily McGough's uniqueness. I'm just a regular Jane. So
you're more than that.
Well,
you've got a lot of...
I have some really cool contemporaries doing the same work in this industry that have connections and such too. We all bring value to what we do and such. I envision my role as being a connector, and frankly, I don't know if you're going to like this, but it's because that's, to me, the level what I can offer folks is, like, I know somebody that knows somebody that somehow we can make this work together, because I've tried for a long time to do it by myself and it's absolutely impossible.
It is. Almost going to agree with that bulldog thing, because you kind of don't let go until the person that you are introducing or bringing into the fold of another person's world, another program, makes that connection. You've been always intentional. You've always been, you know, there's a purpose for why I'm here, and there's a purpose to how I can help you. And I use the term, you lead them right to the door, but it's up to that individual to turn the doorknob and walk through it. We don't have anyone leading us to the door. It makes it challenging. And that's always admired about you. It's not just talk. You're walking the path. You want to help. You genuinely want to help. And the success of a business is in relationships, is in referrals, and then in performing, because you got to be able to perform. And you step up and you're able to, I think, because of the lenses that, you know, from the field into the trailer, into the corporate world, you understand that journey probably more than others.
You know, I think the other piece is that one of the last things we want to have happen is have a small minority or women-owned business fail, not only on a project, but in total or something like that, and have to lose that, because it's so importantly vital to have small minority women veteran-owned businesses in the construction industry. That keeps us competitive. It allows us to broaden our reach. It's critically important, successful on projects, because the last thing we want them to do is fail and have someone say, oh, I knew that was going to happen. Because whoever is going to take a risk and hire somebody new, and it is a risk, mind you, and we are in a very risky business, the last thing we want to do is perpetuate a myth that they have in their head that because they're new or because they're smaller, that they can't do the job.
Absolutely.
So it's really, really deeply important to me that folks that I bring into McGough and say, these are capable individuals from either an organizational standpoint or an individual workforce standpoint, is that I have to believe in them, and I have to believe that they are going to do what they say they can do, and they can do it. And I do believe in them. And so in order to get to that point, I have to understand who they are and have that and develop that relationship.
So then what is McGough doing to ensure that BIPOCs and women and veterans who enter into your ecosystem, the McGough ecosystem, so that they don't fail? Because that's an important question, right? What don't we know about McGough that we can take advantage of?
Well, I think one of the first things is that you have every right to negotiate your contract term. terms. And there's certain terms out there that you can negotiate, right? You can try to negotiate the payment terms. You can try to negotiate the retention. You can definitely negotiate on insurance terms. And sure, you should do that on a regular basis. McGoffin has done that in the past and will continue to do that because we recognize the challenges that small businesses face. Since we don't negotiate terms and conditions of every single contract, we have a standardized contract. You should feel comfortable in being able to come in and do that.
I think that's a great advice, Karen, because a lot of us don't know that. A lot of us in the industry, and until we meet someone like yourself who's out there saying, look, I don't know what everybody else is doing, but at McGough, we'll negotiate and can negotiate on some of these terms. Now, that's not an open invitation to negotiate every single line item in a contract. It is simply there are areas in the industry that can be negotiated. Mobilization, startup costs, pre-con. You know, some of these things can be added in contract language. And I'll say this with probably controversy. We shouldn't feel that we couldn't make that ask for fear that we're going to lose the opportunity.
Right. I mean, all that can happen is we say no, right?
And no's don't hurt.
Right. Just gives you another parameter to say, okay, all right, well, that's not something that we can negotiate. What else is there that we can?
And here's the thing. All those no's in my eyes plants a seed of solution. Mm. You know, this is the fourth person that brought this up. Maybe we as an organization, we as McGough, should look at this to our listeners out there. Don't ever feel like this is the first time they've ever heard of it. Mm. Somebody has said it. And if it is the first time, you know, share it, because it's like, you know, I brought it up to McGough. So then, you know, somebody will bring it up again and bring it up again. So, you know, I encourage our listeners, you know, don't be afraid of no. Don't be afraid of innovative, because, you know, we talked about this too. We don't know what we don't know. Mm. And it takes us to bring forth what's going on in our community to ensure that the powers that be, the players, know what our needs are. So let me pivot a little bit, Karen, because I want to go back.
Okay.
What's wrong with the construction industry? You know, and I bring this not as a criticism to anybody doing anything out there in construction, because we all have flaws. It's difficult to enter into an industry that is one male dominated. Mm. And as women, regardless of color, it's a challenge, right? So twofold question is, what is the industry doing that is not copacetic? There's a lot of stuff, especially in this day and age of DEI. And
right, that's a great question. I'm not going to say it's not copacetic, because I think it's built into the system. It goes back to that systemic racism, sexism that's kind of built in. When you ask me that question, what is wrong with construction? First of all, I love the industry. And I've met so many wonderful people who are passionate about construction.
Absolutely.
And it is just a wickedly cool industry to be in. I think what's wrong with construction is we fall back on, that's the way we always done it.
Yes.
I mean, I think if you look at even going into something that it doesn't necessarily speak to the DEI's things, we're just delving into technology.
Absolutely.
Where other industries are fully immersed already, right? Or at least actively jumping into the pool. We're just dipping our toes in because that's how we've always done it.
Right.
Right. And so I think we need to really figure out how we can be more innovative, take more risks. Boy, my risk mitigation team is not going to be real happy with me on that. And I don't mean risk in people's safety.
Sure.
Or owners' funds or anything like that, but just try to look at things from a more
humanized lens.
Humanized lens.
Practical approach.
Innovative lens. Yes. Yeah. Just, we really need to take the blinders off. Yeah. and get our act together in so many ways.
And when I think about the construction industry, I don't know who said it. Hard to teach the old drug, new tricks. What if it's not broke, don't fix it. All of those idioms that are out there, or these sayings that are out there, that almost hinders the industry.
Mm.
Right? Just like technology. I mean, I can still tell you to this day, you know, many organizations, as much as they want to push towards technology, the individuals in the system are resistant to it too. But on the other side of the fence, you know, small businesses is old school, even in construction, right? We got to read the plans, you know, we still have rulers. You know, that to me is one of the challenges. Mm. It's like, I don't want to say the blind leading the blind. The small businesses don't have the technology. The large businesses are getting into technology. The large businesses can pull off buying 6,000 a month subscriptions to the greatest and bestest technology out there, but the small businesses don't have that. So I see this gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to admit that we don't have all of our technology together, but we're spending $6,000 a month on this subscription. And small businesses are like, oh, I need to get that $6,000 a month subscription because I know that's going to give me that edge. And it's insane. The other side of this is the generation. Construction is old. I know.
Yeah, you're looking at me saying that. I know that.
But when I say that, it's not like individual old, but it's just, it's dated.
I think you're right in one sense. And on the other sense, I do have a hugely hopeful sense about where the future of the industry is going. I just was at the AGC 2022 Construction Summit. Mm-hmm. A lot of young people there. A lot of really passionate young people that were there and actively involved. But I want to go back to your point about kind of the disparity of the capabilities of the larger companies versus the smaller companies.
Sure.
And I think that's where that mentorship piece kind of comes in. One of the things that I would urge folks to do is there's a couple of organizations that are out there that specialize in developing mentors between a larger, more or well-established either GC or specialty contractor and smaller women and minority-owned businesses. For example, the CCC program that you started. There's also a St. Paul-driven program called the Construction Partnering Program, the CPP program.
Mm-hmm.
There's a program down in Dallas that we're actively involved with, which is a hub program, historically underutilized business program. That is where we can share some of that technology capability and tools with our mentees and allow them to step into that where they don't have to necessarily put out that $6,000 that you were talking about, but they still have access to it,
right.
Or at least understand how to utilize it, right? So when they do have that $6,000 on a regular basis to use it, they'll be pros at it, right?
I think that's key. If the construction industry is listening today, I think building that mentoring program that provides access to that technology would help. You know, the training involved in using that technology. It just uplifts a business. Now, not every single business qualifies to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there has to be standards and regulations and qualifications that must be met in order for you to get up to that level. It can be a startup construction company. It'd be hard pressed to just get into that. Doesn't mean that we can't mentor that organization. We just got to get them ready to that.
Right.
To
we
that
have
level.
To meet them where they are. Right.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely.
There's going to be, I think I read somewhere, 17 million new businesses started in 2022. With all this infrastructure dollars coming in every single state, Minnesota getting $6+ billion, I believe, you can bet your bottom dollar there's going to be some construction businesses launching to tap into those dollars. So the mechanisms of this technology, this is the new, the young people
mm-hmm.
coming in. And we've got to get the industry together to meet them where they're at.
Maybe that's what we do, right? You create a co-working space for those up-and-comers, right, that have that technology.
Absolutely, absolutely. So when I open an incubator, I'm going to count on McGough to bring that technology. How about that? You know, when I look at the mentoring program, you made mention that you have a mentoring program partnership.
The program itself is called CPP, which is Construction Partnering Program. And our partner in that is Wenrich PD. Wendy Sullivan is the owner.
Awesome, awesome. So how long has that ecosystem existed? How has that relationship been? What have you learned? The good, the bad, the ugly. From your lenses, it can't have been wine and roses.
Well, there's been a lot of wine.
Yeah.
No, but let me give you a little background. So the CPP program is a program that City of St. Paul initiated probably 20-some plus years ago.
Mm-hmm.
McGough had a partnership with Taroff Construction for 17 of those years.
Wow.
Once we understood the owner was going to be retiring and dissolving the business, we started looking for another CCP partner because we felt very strongly about the importance of our participating in that effort and nurturing
that.
And growing a small BIPOC business.
I love that.
So we had made connections with Wendy, through one of the organizations that we're part of, and started developing kind of a really not a formal type of relationship, but just, sharing and building. And when we got to the point where it was like, all right, we feel really comfortable with Wendy's business and how she does business, her capabilities, her passion around it. And we felt like, oh, this is something that fits our missions, our vision, our goals, right?
What was that time frame, that relationship development time frame?
That was about 2 years, actually.
Yeah.
And during that, partnership with Taraf was slowly winding down. And once that happened, then we approached Wendy and said, would you be interested in partnering with us on a more structured basis, right?
Sure,
as a partner. And it has been wonderful. One of the very humbling things that has been about it is that we've had to kind of start over. So to your point of not being all wine and roses, we've had some stumbling blocks. And I kind of equate it to like almost a marriage, right?
Sure,
it's like
sure.
You have this honeymoon phase where everything's all wonderful, which is that wine and roses part. And then you either have a miscommunication, you get busy, all of a sudden it's the building and developing and nurturing of that relationship isn't top priority for you. And things kind of slow down,
sure.
Or there's a little hiccup. So you recognize it. You go, you know what? I screwed up, or we just haven't connected for a while. And that's what that partnering piece is. It's right. Not just a one-way street, right?
The mentoring program is not a perfect system.
No.
Right? That's why I asked, how long did it take? As small businesses, we ain't got the time. We got work. We got to, because we're chasing our money. We're chasing our dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So the lesson in my eyes here is you don't have to establish relationships with every single one. Nurture the best of the best, right? Nurture the one that's going to return your phone calls, pay attention to your needs, and has got your best interests at heart. Build that relationship, and then eventually it'll come into a proposal that says, you know what? We want to take you under our wing. The thing that I remember working with subcontractors was I knew who was doing their darnest to get their stuff in line and together.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew the ones that were just in it to make money. What we have to recognize is if we perform and we perform well, mm-hmm. we'll make money.
Absolutely.
Our reputation will precede us to getting contracts and everything else. And if you have an ally like the Karen McGabes of the world who is championing for you, it's easier to penetrate the system,
mm-hmm.
you know, pierce that veil. And that's one of the conversations that I think more often than not, I talk to my small businesses about is while they're building capacity, they got to build those relationships. You know, while they're building that relationship, they got to make money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a either or. You got to fire at all cylinders.
Mm.
Construction is competitive. We agree.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt.
And it's a dog eat dog world. And someone is always going to be better than you. People get awarded contracts because of relationships.
That is key right there.
Negotiated work happens because of relationships.
And even some of the best value happens because of relationships too.
Absolutely.
So you might not come in at the very lowest, but if you're within a reasonable amount of money from that next one, and you have a relationship with that project manager or that estimator, and they know that the owner values the importance of supporting minority and women-owned businesses, that individual is going to stand up and say, hey, for a small amount of money here, you can support this effort and you can help build capacity in these small businesses. So
I want to pivot a little bit, and I want to close with a really, really interesting topic. And I'm going to post this in the construction realm. Rumor has it that the big general contractor shop bids.
Ooh. You're
right?
Throwing down a gauntlet here.
I am. You know, as GCs, we're not going to come out and say we shop bids. It's against, you know, ethics, policies, rules. But then it comes down to relationships. That a project manager, I've done this, will call my favorite subcontractor and have a conversation about their bid as it compares to another bid. It's the reality of construction. Maybe nobody wants to talk about it, but it happens. What do you say to those, rumor has it, that this is happening in the industry? You know, here we are encouraging relationships,
mm-hmm.
building momentum, and here you are championing us to win, but your project manager has a favorite. How do we look at that? You know, from your lenses, right?
Right, right.
From your lenses, because you're not responsible for the project. You're a liaison for us.
I'm not doing the bids,
you're
right?
You're not doing the bids. You're not seeing all the numbers. You don't see all the coming. You just see the hustle and bustle happening in the office because bids are coming, you know, left and right through fax machines, emails, and, you know, phone calls are being missed and things
mm-hmm.
like that. So after all of that dust settles
mm-hmm.
and this comes to your lap, how would you have dealt with it? And what can we do to help our project managers.
So again, throwing down that gauntlet about bid shopping, and frankly, I have to respectfully disagree with you. I have never seen that in my 23 years of working for McGough. And for the first 12 years, I actually worked with project managers and very closely on projects and bidding opportunities and those types of things. Never seen that. McGough has an open book determination with the owner and an incredibly strong code of conduct. So that type of behavior is certainly not expected at McGough. And frankly, project managers just really don't have the time to do that, honestly. If you're working on a project with McGough, you may have 40 different subcontracting partners that you've got to let and keep going and contract with and manage. And you don't have time to call your buddy down the road and say, you know, here, can you drop it by X amount of dollars? It doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen at McGough. We're a very integrous company. So I wouldn't expect that. If anything, kind of do the opposite, kind of what suggests to be the opposite is that we have asked our project management teams to consider, you know, reaching out to those small women, minority, veteran-owned businesses, if they're like way over contract amount or way under contract amount, and say, you know, something doesn't seem right here. Are you sure that you've checked this or you've added this, or, you know, where's this number coming from? Just so we give them a adequate start and footing on that bidding ground. And then we take all those numbers presented to the owner. And we help the owners make those selections on those partners. If minority or women-owned contractor is slightly above, here's an opportunity for you to utilize and create capacity and build experience with a DBE, very minor amount of money moving that up. And so we actually will do that too. But ultimately, that those determinations are in the hands of the owner. We understand the importance of working very closely and supporting DBEs in the industry as a whole. So you won't find that too often.
Well, you know, what I love about it is that extra mile, you know, that project managers will actually see and inquire why the bid is high and inform the minority small business, you know, hey, there's something weird here. Can we have this conversation? And that needs to happen industry-wide, right? And that's refreshing to hear that McGough actually has the conversations with the women, minority, and the veteran-owned small businesses about their bid, because it is challenging. And I absolutely agree with you. Project managers, 9 times out of 10, do not have the time to go bid shopping, right? A lot of our small businesses also feel, you know, they get sensitive about it because they feel like they put all this time to submit a bid. But in actuality, it's just part of the bidding process, the initial
bidding
process.
It's part of the process as a whole. I can't tell you, especially on larger projects. And I know we have the capabilities because we're a larger company, but we have had gone through multiple iterations of estimates for projects that sometimes don't even come to fruition because A, the company doesn't get the funding, or, you know, who knows what happens, like a pandemic or whatever. But that, I think, is really challenging and something that we can think of, like, how can we make that more a possibility to those smaller companies, is because a component of getting into a project early, as you mentioned, getting, you know, being seated at the table while those decisions are getting made, right? And what I'm suggesting here is that if you can do a pricing exercise, which I know is really, really challenging from a timing perspective or personnel perspective, but you do get a chance to work really closely with the estimating team and the project management team. And then you also have an opportunity to intimately get to know what the project looks like rather than just getting 2 weeks to look at the project and the documents, right? So you get to know it a little bit more intimately and you can fine tune that pricing piece of it.
Mackey Company does a job costing class wherein we talk about the importance of understanding the stages of the entire bidding process. Price exercise happens at the pre-bid stage. If our small construction-owned businesses know what their job costs are, it would make that pricing exercise a little bit easier and rhythmic-like than a pricing exercise at the pre-bid stage would be really, really critical. So love this conversation, Karen. I want to kind of pivot a little bit and end with, what would you advise the small businesses, our minority, our women, and our veteran-owned small businesses in terms of how to succeed as a construction company trying to get a piece, for instance, of the infrastructure bill, a piece of a million or multi-million dollar project?
Well, that's a great question, since I'm not an entrepreneur, and I highly respect any entrepreneur, but particularly entrepreneurs, color, and women coming into an industry that is not geared towards them. But I think two things come to mind when you ask me that question: patience and persistence. And I know business owners are wearing many, many hats, but truly, I feel strongly that you have to work on your business and to get to a point where you can start creating those relationships, because the industry is very relationship driven. It's such a high risk industry that you want to know and have confidence in any partner that you work with. The other piece that I think is really important is learning to walk before you can run. Nobody wants a bad project, right? And so the general contractor is ultimately responsible for providing solid project that's on time, on budget, and of value to the owner. So I think it's really important for business owners to understand it takes time to build a business and to gradually move into doable but stretch goals, but not like take a contract that you simply do not have the capability of doing and fooling yourself that you're going to step right into that role. But those are a couple of things that I see, I think, that would be of benefit to any business owner, is knowing your capabilities and where you can stretch, and then really working on your business.
And that's pretty good advice for all businesses, like you said, Karen, not just construction. You know, this conversation around bidding projects in construction is always an interesting topic. I can appreciate McGuff and their efforts to truly level the playing field and procuring services from minorities, women, and veterans. As I said earlier, to have project managers have conversations about a bid is an amazing practice. I hope that as part of good faith efforts and intentional inclusion, that others in the industry do as McGuff does. Next week, we close our series of highlighting women in business with Tamiko Trott-Binns with Trott-Binns Construction. I'm excited to hear her journey as an entrepreneur, particularly as a woman in the construction industry. Finally, remember to smash that like button and drop a comment about this topic. Don't forget to go after that low-hanging fruit, but always remember to look up and see the rest of the tree filled with opportunities. Until next time.